Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back. Are we live now? All right, perfect. Second day at Hinman, Atlanta. You're at Georgia. What is the exact name of this place? Georgia World Congress
something. Center. The World Congress Center.
World Congress Center.
Hinman Dental Meeting, man.
And I'm super excited because we have this gentleman with us for the second time on the show.
You're like a routine guest.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. And he's so,
it's
I feel,
a curse.
I feel so honored because it's hard to catch this guy these days. I mean, look at his Facebook and every day it's a different country, different city, and he's teaching and he's super involved. So without further ado, Dr. Michael Scherer.
Hey. Doc, welcome.
Sonora, California.
Well, it's kind of cool, too, because I've met Payman a couple times, you know, first time. It's really fun. We kind of connect and know each other virtually. Yeah. But, I mean, I had so much fun the last time I was on your guys' podcast.
Yes.
And you guys are a hell of a team, man. I'm looking around here, looking at him, and this is the best-looking booth in the whole
Dude,
place.
You're too kind.
Thank
Holy
you.
It's
cow.
Cool. It's fun.
No, it's good. I mean, we had a lot of feedback from our first episode that we had with you. We got tons of young dentists and... Mostly because last time we covered a lot about dental schools and what they do and what they could do and what they couldn't do and things like that. So now I want to kind of push things forward and talk about what are you doing with PROS? What is the technology? What is this restorative thing? Like, I'll talk clinical mostly. Because last time it was all educational. Talk clinical and tell us, what are you doing these days, man?
Well, it's literally nonstop, like something digital, something 3D printing, and then also leveraging these technologies to make them work effectively for us. Mm-hmm. Because I'll be frank, you know, all this technology sounds fun, it sounds cool, and it just comes down to workflows.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Whether it comes down also to full arch workflows or individual single tooth workflows, you know, part of what I was alluding to last time and where you guys are at really this kind of crossroads with the millennial dental group, sure. Which I'm inspired by because, as I told you last time, I'm right on that cusp.
Right.
As a millennial.
Well, we would gladly accept you. You would help. You would bring us up a little bit.
Highlight. Yes.
But nonetheless, you know what? It's funny because we're on that cusp of digital technology and some of the older established dentists are still like, oh my God, you know, I've been doing this way for the past 20 years. Why would I change? And digital technology is right in our grasp. Okay. The younger generation, the people that are saying, shoot, okay, I don't remember what a 2400 baud modem is. Who's freaking cares? All I really know is I get online and I do some stuff.
It works. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it's gaming or whatever. But I mean, the analogy I use all the freaking time is that dentistry for me started with video games.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I do it every day in my clinical practice using the wand and scanning. But I'm addicted, man. Digital dentistry, it's here. It's here to stay. And your listeners are tuned into exactly the age group dynamic of who is going to be leading this. If you're not already.
How do you wade through the workflows and whatnot? Because what I've found, in my practice, is I'm trying to work on like the digital aligners, right? And doing 3D printing that and trying to weigh the balance of my time, my assistant's time. You know, do I use a software where I do it all? Do I third party out some of it? Talk about how you make a decision in workflows that work for you, that where it becomes a good ROI. And obviously you're not doing aligners because, you know, you're a prospect, but when will we see that?
You know, the funny thing is my wife is actually an orthodontist.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. She's next door. Yeah.
Yeah. So long story short, it's kind of a decision that I only look at other dentists and I say, what is your time worth for you to do? And what it comes down to is I can't answer that.
Sure.
What I can tell you is
that... that's a good point.
Yeah, for clear aligners, I still don't think the ROI is there for me to sit down and do all these cases. And I still don't think the ROI is really that great for me to print out 60 models and then also do the vacuum form on
all
of
them. It's a lot of work.
Even for my assistants, you're saying, oh, I'm going to outsource it to my assistants and have them do it. It's still going to only cost somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 for you to send out to either ClearCorrect or Invisalign. How many hours is it going to really take you to A, either design or B, print, and then manage all that? because you still have to be part of it. Even though your systems do a lot of the work, you still have to be part of it. And that some of the do-it-yourself software is kind of clunky right now. It's still early beta testing.
Really cool, but
awesome.
Awesome.
Like the Blue Sky software is amazing.
Unbelievable.
And you know, they're just kind of started really to start playing with the ortho thing.
But they're pushing the limits, which is amazing.
The dentures.
And so helpful. But yeah, it is. It does take time to develop it and make
Without
it smooth
a
for.
And know, I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of Corey, Baron, everybody that's working on this stuff in the Blue Sky system.
Right.
And the entire company, as you know, I'm a huge fan. But what happens is the surgical guide side is so well polished that it literally only takes 15, 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes to do your own guide. And that stuff is every minute that you spend on the computer, you're studying the case, and that way the surgery goes really easy. But for me, when it comes to clear aligners, I'm not really learning a lot by rotating teeth and doing all that. So in my opinion, I like to outsource for the design and then print it. And then, you know, you can do that through some Orchestrate, iRock, and other things that people like Rick Ferguson and Raynal are working on. It's amazing stuff because you don't have to do any of the slug work and you just print the stuff out. So there is some ROI potential there. But, you know, for me and for my wife, she just says, you know what, I don't want to deal with this.
Sure.
Send it out.
Yeah.
But when it comes to wax-ups,
okay,
designing full arch cases where, okay, just for me to do an arch of full arch is going to cost anywhere from a low of, say, $2,000 to a high of $10,000.
Sure.
An arch.
Right.
And as the Millennial Dentist podcast, your listeners, one thing I've stressed last time, and I'll stress again here today, anybody listening, watch your overhead.
Right.
Costs are critical. So what happens is that, okay, I don't know how you all are doing it, but for me, I can't really price my cases above, say, about $20,000 to $30,000 an arch. And then when you start breaking that down, if $7,000-$8,000 of that is just the final prosthetics,
right,
it's not a very profitable procedure for me. Where something like implant overdentures is incredibly good on the ROI.
Yeah, gosh, right. Yeah. Because you just, I mean, are you also loading any of those at all, or you are?
Big time.
So you put the implant locators in, and you also
load
the same
talking about this.
Yeah.
Well, I hate the uncovery appointment.
Right.
You know, because you got numb them all up, they're sensitive. Like,
and they're like, oh, I didn't know this is going to hurt as bad as just this first time.
You know, yeah, you kind of hate that. How many implants are you wanting to have before you're loading them? Are you just two?
You know, the funny thing is the research supports only using two for immediate load, same day. The research 100% supports that. I can send you five articles after this podcast. What I do know is that from my experience, though, I still like to do about four locators if I'm going to immediate load, four implants. But it also comes down to the patient factor because if I'm doing a lot of alveoplasty, taking out teeth and socketing implants, I'm going to bury them and cover them. Just because it has nothing to do with the success rate of implants and immediate loading, but it has to do more with the patient factor. So we're building up this huge experience for our patients, which is, all right, this is going to be the most amazing thing in the whole world. This is overdenture. You're going to love it. No matter how good your overdenture is, it's still not as rewarding
good as teeth.
Right. So what happens is that you load it the same day. The patient's going, this morning I had teeth. Now I'm in pain, and I have these big, bulky teeth in my mouth. And yeah, they clip in, and I'm doing better. But what happens with that is that then you have to worry about this factor, the mental factor.
I see where you're going,
You kind of say, well, I'm going to let these implants heal, see you back in 2 months. Yeah, the uncovery stinks, but it's also a great way of getting keratinized tissue, get all those things. And then what you can do at that appointment is do your immediate pickup. If you wanted to.
That's true.
To kind of balance out the two of those. Yeah.
Well, and the nice part about it's good for them to experience
not having it.
Exactly. And then value. This is why you pay the money for the implants.
Exactly.
This is
and what especially you're going some of the smokers, some of the things that you know these people are not going to try to clean anything at this time of healing. And I just feel like with locators, I love to bury them and come back and do the even soft tissue grafting from their palate the second time around to build a nice emergence around the abutments. And it had a great success because I'm looking back at my cases from the only like three and a half years ago, and I'm looking at why didn't I do a graft on that case, or why did I? And the ones that I have a nice tissue, the patients love it. They don't even come for any adjustment. The inserts last forever. How often do you ever change these inserts, or what do you say about these locator inserts as far as how often do they need to be changed?
This is a great question, you know, because I get this question a lot. The thing is that during the first year that when the patient has a brand new overdenture, from the date that I do the pickup, 1 year later, I cover all the clip changes. So no costs. It's all built into the procedure. But on average, I only have to replace them maybe once or twice during that first year. And I'll usually leave them in the black processing mails as long as I can. However, that's off-label.
Right.
A little bit off-label.
So
fair disclosure. You know. But that's a... It's a technique that's worked well for me because it's kind of like I call them their training wheels.
Yeah, they're training wheels. They're so much happier. Yeah. I do that on the top, especially at the beginning.
I've never done that.
Five or six.
That. It's a pearl. You just drop me a pearl.
Yes. See, that's why you got to listen to the podcast, guys. It's better than going to CE. No,
but
I'm kidding.
Nonetheless, to answer your question, to answer your question fully, once the patient's used to them after about a year, maybe once a year you have to change them, if that. To tell you the truth, it totally depends on the patient. So if I have a patient that loves crunchy, hard foods, maybe flips their teeth in and out, if they snap them in by biting in, but if they follow the rules of clicking them into place, they're careful with it, the ridge is good, the soft tissue is good, what you work hard on, all these things matters. The longest I have ever had to never change a clip is about 14 years.
Wow.
I have
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's very unusual. That doesn't happen very often. Am I lucky on that one? Yes, but it's also the patient. So this patient was actually a good family friend of ours, and I treated, you know, back in school and everything very early on. And she's in the book, you know, and I talked about that last time. But long story short, we did this overdenture for her. Her teeth were failing because she came to me and she said, I can't come, you know, this is a friend, I can't come to that event. I said, what's wrong? She said, my teeth are really hurting. I said, well, come on in, let me check you out. I was still in school, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Took all her teeth out, did overdentures, just two implants on the mandible, and she valued this procedure so much. We paid for it, she's a family friend, took care of it, everything's good. She babies this thing.
That's awesome.
And long story short, she's so happy with it. I go back and see her once a year, and I bring my little locator box with me, ready to change these clips out. They've got pink inserts on it. We're going on 14 years this year.
Wow.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
Inspiring.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
Well, I think selfishly, probably we have so many good questions. So you were talking about earlier about immediate loading and that sort of thing. One thing, and I know from a fixed standpoint, when you immediately load something, that occlusion is really important, right? Is that as important when you're loading it with a locator denture? Because I feel like that's definitely...
What type of occlusal scheme do you go to? Or do you do... What do you do? Monoplane on the bottom?
Because that's probably where I feel like I'm weak at, and why I would be hesitant to load. Because I'd be worried about the how the occlusion is. Do I have that right? Does it play as big of a role as when you're doing a fixed one?
Occlusion in dentistry, and especially in full arch dentistry, is everything.
Right.
And whether you're doing a removable prosthesis or a fixed prosthesis, understanding how to control occlusion, and more importantly, how to manage or control parafunction is critical. So, like Payman said, I do pretty much everything lingualized, occlusion for removable. If I'm doing fixed over fixed, I have canine rise and traditional cuspid occlusion. But what happens, or disclusion, what happens with that though is let's talk a little bit about immediate loading strategies as well, because I have a lecture here at Hinman.
Oh, wow.
Immediate loading.
Immediate loading.
Of implant overdent.
Because I knew you were talking. Goodness. I didn't know. I thought it was just 3D printing.
No.
Immediate loading. Yeah. Nice.
When is this one? Is this already happening?
Tomorrow.
Oh, well, we might have to stick out of here. Yeah.
So a couple little pearls, little things as well. First and foremost, I only really like to immediate load if I don't do a lot of soft tissue reduction, alveoplasty.
Uh-huh. Right.
I'll do it with extractions, but if I don't have to do a lot of alveoplasty or big flaps, I'll immediate load.
How would you know? This is tons of questions asked about how do I know how much bone I need to reduce? How much? How do you know? And I tell them diagnostic cats from the beginning when you get, you have that type, you know how much space they have with their existing teeth, and then how much can you push that? Is that what you do, or do you have any pearls as far as how do you know interocclusal relationship space?
Here's the key, especially with your audience, because 3D scanning, cone beam software is everything for me right now. So instead of having to make alginates or maybe take their teeth out and
do
duplicate
that.
The denture, measure this way, my mind can't handle that. You know, I've got kind of a simple mind. So I take a comb beam, and if the patient has teeth, all I do is measure from the tooth to where I need to reduce, which is 9 to 11 millimeters.
Right.
However, if they're missing teeth, maybe it's a patient wearing a denture, I'll actually take a radio-opaque PBS.
Which you have an article about that. The green mousse, right? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
So for people, get on Google, type in. I think that's what I did one time. I typed in green. Tell me, what is the name of green mousse bite or something?
That's one of the brands as well.
Right.
But it really is any PVS material that is radio opaque, uh-huh. and you can actually take any PVS and mix in a little bit of barium sulfate or powder.
It'll show on the X-ray. And
then the key is that you have to put that in the denture, do a closed mouth reline like you would do a reline procedure, bite down, reline, border mold. Then the patient goes for a cone beam scan, wearing their denture and the radio opaque PVS, and the denture will show up on the 3D. Where normally I was always trained in school, like cone beam is only for hard tissues.
Not anymore.
Right. Not anymore. And MRI is for soft tissues. But on a cone beam, you can see skin. You can see cheeks.
Right.
So what you do is that you just have to think outside the box. So normally, if you scan a patient with wearing a denture in their mouth, the soft tissue touches it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't see the outline of the patient's denture. So what happens is that if you just create an air pocket around the denture, you'll see the denture perfectly. How do we create an air pocket? Ready? So every cone beam that I take, mm-hmm. I create an air pocket. Now, there's a few ways to do that. The easiest way is just take cotton rolls.
Cotton rolls, yes.
Put like six of them, seven of them in the mouth, two on the biting surface, three on the buccal, two on the lingual. And I...
Pearls.
Oh, pearls. Yes, man. This just,
I got nuggets. A bag for my nuggets over here. My chicken nuggets over here.
And 100% of my cone beam scans these days are with an open bite.
Okay.
So I just genuinely believe...
Open them up.
And so...
Are you using more of like a chin rest or still having them kind of like...
You can have them bite on a stick.
Okay.
Chin rest is good. The chin cup or the little bite stick. And then on the cone beam, you can see the outline of the denture and do a measurement that way. So I skip all that. All this measurement stuff. Right. It just goes right to that. Then if I don't need to reduce, implants go in, and then I pick them up in the denture, so long as they torque out.
Right.
But another pearl for you as well. So if you're doing immediate load of locator, one thing you have to consider, like you said, is occlusion. But you also have to consider rotation. You also have to consider that you're going from a patient wearing an old denture, partial, failing teeth. What is the number one death of an implant? Wiggle.
Right, micro movement.
Micro movement. So with a fixed prosthesis, if you join them and splint them all together, they move together.
So that's how they work really well. Yeah.
Right. But with a locator, with overdentures, where you're going to get most of your movement is not when the locator's in, not when the denture's in, but when the patient's putting them in and out.
So you want them super loose.
Because you're used to a loose denture, and then all of a sudden you're going, God, and I have to pop it out.
Yes.
And they literally twerk like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Another reason to use the black processing inserts.
Right.
It's a slip fit versus a snap.
Right.
Okay. Second of all, not a lot of people know this, but the locator nylon stays rigid, but the housing pivots. The little metal part inside of the denture.
Okay.
And that part will pivot.
I didn't know that.
So the nylon is pretty snug on top of the locator, and then the top pivots. That's true of the blue, pink, clear, red, green, and orange. Okay, but the black processing insert doesn't pivot. So it, in my opinion, this is empirical, not supported by evidence, research, or by Zest Dental Solutions. This is my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I've had tremendous success by doing that. Leaving the black processing in, it acts as like a splint.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool.
That's incredible.
That's
one of the things about it, I was going
to
say.
I can't wait to try this now.
A lot of people ask about how to clean them. Patients ask, how do you clean these? And I have, and I don't know your experience, but from Tony Zablett told me that it is true how sometimes a lot of people leave these dentures at home at night in water. And water has shown to go inside some of these inserts and make them weaker than they are. So what is the best protocol to maintaining these overdentures for folks? What do you tell them?
Well, first and foremost, the most important thing is to make sure the patient knows how to clean the inside of the housings or of the actual...
What do you clean them with that doesn't abrade the locator head? Or
the only thing that I found to work is a water pick.
Water pick.
And that works for every patient, though. So they have toothbrushes and special this and special that. But to tell you the truth, water pick, water pick, water pick. Yeah. And then on the denture itself, I'm a firm believer in water sorption of the nylon.
Right.
And that actually causes... the locator to snap a little bit tighter. So I'm not afraid of water sorption. But what I am concerned with is denture fizzy tablets in the locator over denture cases. And I've seen also, not based on the literature empirically, based upon my personal opinion, I have seen changes of those nylons over time with patients that are in fizzy tablets. It comes out more of that kind of like aqua color when in the blue. And then I believe that it actually makes the nylon a little bit more rigid when the fizzy tablet hits it. And there could be some potential relationship between some cases of where we might see actual abutment wear. in those patients. Mm-hmm. So I encourage water.
Water.
Or I encourage them just to have a humidor so the teeth go down, just a little bit of water touching the teeth, and then that's it. The key is with acrylic, you just got to keep it moist. You just can't let it dry out.
Let's step back for a second. We talked before you got here, we were talking to Dr. Christensen, and that was awesome.
It was cool.
Super cool experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we touched upon the fact that the technology, the 3D printing, and a lot of these things are coming out. Dentists and young dentists are not experienced with the fundamental preps and things like that, which you, as being a faculty in the academic world, you can, vouch for all of that. However, what do you see right now? People getting, they're so confused. Young dentists, they're like, oh, okay, well, I have all these 3D stuff that I could do my own guides, I could print, I could do implants. And then there's all these people talking about this foundation of preps. I don't want to do preps. How do you get, so for somebody that listened to our conversation and they really love this stuff, what is the most successful way of starting out right out of school to do these things? Like, what is it? Is it a hands-on course? Is it, what is that that you can tell, guide
like
them
where
in
do you get the foundation,
that,
kind of, so to speak?
You know, to be very frank, after being in about 5 different dental schools at different teaching or student level, the stuff we learn in dental school is really pretty foundationally good.
Okay.
Tooth preparations of what is taught in dental school across the board tends to be very high quality. There is nothing wrong with doing things like we did back in school. Now, granted, we're not going to take an entire appointment and do a core buildup.
Right.
And then bring the patient back a week later. This is ridiculous. But there's a fine blend between the stuff we learn in school and then CE courses.
Right.
The only problem with CE courses is it's so short and so intensive.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find courses on fundamental prep designs would be very difficult. Just because...
Or operative.
And
or
it's not flashy either. Right. So it'd be hard to survive running a course that was on prep designs for the most part too. Because people just, they want to do flashy stuff.
Right.
But there is a need for it. So, long story short, join some of the organizations, especially the restorative societies, the groups in Chicago, Equilibration Society. They still talk a lot about these key fundamental type of lectures and programs and whatnot. Or the best way to do it is just to get a mentor and work with an older dentist, somebody that is, they've been doing it the same way, and maybe they were schooled back in the 70s, 80s, or 90s. The fusion between
the old and the new
is key.
Exactly.
Well, and we talk about that all the time with my dad and I, and how huge that's been for both of us, honestly. And, I remember when I first graduated, I would take intraoral pictures of, before my prep, after, just not for him to check me in any way, but just to be like, what do you think about this? Am I doing it right? What would you do differently? And trying to get that feedback. Cause I'm like, look, I am stupid not to rely on 30 years of experience and what you've done and seen and to not make the same mistakes that I don't have to make the same mistakes you did, So it's been helpful.
And, when it comes down to it, is along that same lines, getting involved with digital impressions or CEREC or same day dentistry, it's been proven. The folks that do this, their preps get better and better.
I totally agree.
Oh my God, I did that?
When was the last time a lab sent you a prep back or impression back and said, I need you to re-impress? Very rare. And that's unfortunate, honestly, that we don't have that kind of, they're worried about losing their job or being fired by their dentist, that they can't have the autonomy to do that, unfortunately. But I've tried to be with my lab guy, look, if I ever send you something, tell me what I can do better. Especially removable, because that's an area where I'm weaker at and I'm doing more of. It's like trying to develop that relationship with my removable lab and being like, I need help. I need you to teach me ways to do
Let's
things
talk
better.
About Hinman and conventions. And I know you're a big advocate.
Speaking
and
here a couple times.
Yes. Tell us, what are these, what are the young dentists losing, or what are some of the ways that we could improve? Or what are the, for us, for example, as having the podcast.
Or the meetings.
And the meetings. What do you see that you feel like people need to know or do things at this type of setting that it needs to be brought up and they need to know, the ones that are listening at home or people that don't really go to these, which I know tons of people. So what do you say?
And what can the meetings be doing better?
Better. To bring them in, to make them excited and things like that too.
Without a doubt. Those are definitely very important questions. And if I were to speak to somebody that was on the fence, do I really need to attend meetings these days? What, everything's on Facebook and Instagram and all these things. Keep in mind that nothing replaces being one-to-one, okay? Or this type of interaction that just comes off the cuff. Let's think about either in school or in GPR residency or specialty residency, et cetera, most of what we learn there is lateral learning. So being able to just sit here for 5 minutes at a lunch table and to say, hey, tell me about a case you did recently that was interesting. Let's just have a chat about that. And Facebook groups, online social media is incredible. The way that we're connecting now with sharing cases and the learning that's occurring from my couch, okay, is insane. Okay, but it does not completely replace coming to meetings, because I encourage especially the, you know, newer dentists and the new grads, come to meetings. It's an incredible place. Not just the weekend courses that are separate from the meetings, but come to the meetings, take a few fundamental courses at the ADA here at Hinman, other types of organizations and groups, your state society. California Dental Association meeting is awesome. Again, from California. They have wonderful fundamental courses on pathology, on tooth preps.
California is great. I wish Tennessee Dental was more than
that. We're going to hopefully help improve.
Yeah. All right, right on.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that I see so much activity in different states, especially California, New York, Chicago. And I wish, like, how can we bring this to Tennessee? And Alabama is better than Tennessee.
What would you say to the meetings? Like, if you get to go, if you were to say, you know, go in front of a board of, you know, Hinman or Chicago Midwinter or ADA, be like, you know what, I think if we could do these things, we could get more young dentists, it would make it more entertaining, more exciting. What are some of the things you think we could do better?
You know, you just got to make it cool. You got to make it fun.
Out of the ordinary.
You gotta have the millennial podcast front and center.
I kind of agree. Why are we not the front?
But at the affordable rate.
Yeah, we need the affordable rate front booth.
Well, bring more people in. Well, that's the key too, is that making it fun, but it does come from your audience too, to look deep inside and say, what is holding me back? And coming to the meetings are wonderful. And being able to hang out with the different people here are amazing. But yes, we need targeted courses that do appeal to that generation as well. And they're trying hard.
Well, I love you being here. I mean, shoot, the courses you're teaching are way, way more fun.
Yes, they're fun.
You know, they're very future.
I mean,
kind of,
for people that people. They get on his Facebook, you could see when even he talks, he's the most down to earth that you ever see. And he spends time when somebody asks and posts a case about the overdenture or implants or anything that excites him. He goes on and in detail.
Yeah,
he writes down, and I've learned so much just from his comments and posts. So,
Jeff Roush is here.
Yes.
Which is just what he's doing with sleep and some of the other stuff is insane.
Yes.
I mean, so I appreciate them taking the effort to move into like what's happening now and what the buzz is about, because that's the reality too, is we are kind of excited about these things,
right.
and you know, they need to be talked about at these meetings. But
it's been a lot of fun. We chit-chat. We've been from Hawaii and Shanghai to
locators.
Atlanta's a great town too,
yes.
though. We love Atlanta.
No, it is good.
And out in California, we don't get as much of that down-home southern cooking
that's
like
true.
You can get out
that's
here.
Right,
Tennessee, forget
Tennessee.
It, man.
Yeah, man.
So, next time you do a CE course at Pigeon Forge in Dollywood,
hey.
I'll be there. My wife loves that place.
I love it. Yeah, we got to get you to Tennessee. That'd be fun.
That'd be great.
So, what's next for you? Next few months, how do they look like?
Well, thankfully, I get a couple weeks of rest.
Right.
It's been a lot of travels this past time, but I'll be at the Texas Dental Association, and I've got lots of other different regional meetings, as well as just our 3D printing study courses.
How many days you work right now? Practice?
4 days.
Tell people about your two online courses you have, because I'm actually using them, and I love them. And so tell them about, because they're a great resource.
Well,
and
thank you.
A very affordable resource.
Right, very affordable. For the amount of work he put in there, it's very affordable.
Well, thank you, guys. For anybody that's tuned in, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Check out the websites, fasttrackdentalce.com. I have two online courses, one specifically on intraoral scanning and 3D printing.
I love that. Yes, it's great.
It's about 30 hours of video.
Yeah.
And it's also with CE credits provided by UNLV School of Dental Medicine. And then also the second one is an implant overdenture course, start to finish, including surgery, restorative videos and everything. Because digital dentistry is a passion of mine, but my first passion is implant overdentures. And I'm glad I got to share the story of EULA with you.
Yes.
There's things that we find that when we start out, and in dental school, mm-hmm. that shapes us and changes us for our careers. And that was one of them.
Right. Thank you so much,
Doc. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a blast.
Absolutely.
As always, a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Have you again soon. He's a routine in our
I love
show.
It.
Getting
I
back.
Love it.
Thank you
so
for the
much.
Opportunity.
Everybody, work smarter, not harder. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.